You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare is working to tamp down misinformation around COVID-19 in our state, specifically on the department's Facebook page. Now, last week, the agency announced it would actually block members of the public from posting on its page after sharing or promoting misinformation there. However, these days on social media, fighting misinformation can frankly feel like you're battling against a tidal wave. How did we get here? And how can we be sure we're not spreading misleading or incorrect information in our own lives? Well, joining us today to talk about the effects of misinformation during COVID is Dr. Ko'olina Koltai, a researcher with the Center for an Informed Public at the University of Washington. Dr. Koltai, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me here, Gemma.
So your work is focused on vaccine misinformation in particular, which, I mean, we all know is a hot topic these days. So I'm curious about when and why you got interested in studying this. I mean, did you have any idea how important this topic would be before COVID started?
That's a great question. I have been studying this probably since about 2015. I used to live in California, and very famously, we had a measles outbreak in some of the Southern California mm-hmm. theme parks. And it just kind of got me questioning and thinking, like, this question of, you know, why are people not vaccinating? And I'd always thought vaccines were good. And it really didn't settle well with me to say, like, oh, these are just people who are uneducated or people who are dumb or entitled. Sort of these, like, throwaway responses. And I think I've just kind of been stuck on that question ever since 2015, really focusing initially on like childhood vaccines. And obviously, I've always thought it was a really important topic. I spent many years thinking about it. And now it's definitely, I think, one of the most important topics today.
Oh, 100%. Okay, so let's step back for a minute, because I'm curious about how does this moment in vaccine misinformation maybe compare to other times? And I ask this because, you know, you see a lot of things on social media and other places, you know, comparing this to the smallpox and vaccine, but how everybody got vaccinated, right? And we were able to eradicate smallpox.
So, you know, anti-vaccination sentiment or vaccine hesitancy has been around for as long as there's been vaccines. So like hundreds of years. We see even like cartoons depicted in like the 1800s of like people who are hesitant to vaccines or propaganda from the anti-vaccination league. So this is something that's been happening on for a very, very long time. Well before social media, right? But, you know, as we normally think about vaccines, you know, most people didn't really have to think about vaccines until they became a parent, you know, deciding whether or not they're going to vaccinate their child. Most people don't have a flu shot requirement at their work or anything. And so there was always like the potential for this to really explode in sort of the modern day anti-vaccination movement. We've seen an increase in vaccine hesitancy and anti-vaccination sentiment and content really stemming, I would say, if you want to say like a pinpoint moment, is the very famous sort of like Lancet paper in 1980 by Wyatt Wakefield that initially linked autism or autism spectrum disorder, ASD, to the MMR, which is the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. And really sort of that movement growing and then over the years and then over the past, like, I think 5-6 years, we've seen it, you know, really explode with the prevalence of that content on social media, spreading to different communities globally, even beyond just the U.S. And so I would say that, you know, It was often like I often call it a perfect storm of everything you needed to happen to really sort of have widespread vaccine hesitancy that we're seeing today, right? You had to have a brand new vaccine. We didn't know a lot of, you know, social media, misinformation already being an issue. The tying with vaccine sentiment with political ideology, you know, for a long time, it was actually rather nonpartisan. You could find people who are left-leaning and right-leaning who are vaccine hesitant. It didn't really matter by party. But as we see that, you know, science is inherently political and vaccines really being tied to politics over the past like 5 years, different representatives supporting, say, a parent's right to choose bills, which are just bills for parents to choose to like not vaccinate. We see outbreaks happening, measles happening more in the U.S. It's just everything you needed. And then the pandemic hit, which is basically just like, if you imagine throwing a bunch of gasoline on kindling, and that's where we are here today.
Yeah. So I'm curious, is successful like viral vaccine misinformation rooted in some type of truth, or in your research, is it always a complete lie?
That's a really great question. I see it's sometimes a little bit of both, right? And I would say that a lot of the narratives, sort of these overarching ideologies or the reasons why people are not vaccinating, those haven't actually changed, right? A lot of the narratives we saw prior to the pandemic are the same narratives that we're seeing today, just being applied to the COVID vaccine. And when we look at these, you know, there's sometimes some bit of truth to them. So one of the big bits of like misinformation that you see, people have probably seen everyone around, is this idea of like related to VAERS, which is the Vaccine Adverse Reporting System, which is a system that is set up by the CDC for people to report vaccine injuries or side effects. So you can imagine you go and you get a shot and you're like, oh, my arm is kind of swollen. You can actually go and report that and be like, I had a swollen, you know, red ejection site at the vaccine. The issue with that is that it is not meant to be a comprehensive system. And it's also anyone can go and submit something into it. So you go in there, you even see things like, oh, I was hit by lightning afterwards, or I got superpowers after getting vaccinated. There really isn't any way to verify the data that's in this like self-reported system. So people might think they have a side effect that's actually not related to it. Some people use it jokingly, and some people argue that might be even underused. But the point is meant to be used as a signaling system. So when you see misinformation out there or content that says, here is, say, CDC data or evidence or proof of all the injuries or all the deaths from, say, a COVID vaccine, we know we can't actually fully trust that data because, you know, there could be people in there inflating the data, saying, like, here's all these proof of injuries when they're not really happening. And so there's at some point, like that is misinformation, but there does have some nugget of truth because it is still a CDC system. We just can't verify it. So you can see how misinformation can be really powerful. If you just see a Facebook post that says, here's all the numbers of reported deaths this week from the vaccine. That sounds so scary. It sounds horrifying. You don't want to have death from a vaccine. But in reality, right, we see very little, very few injuries.
So how much does social media play in this? I mean, as you said, we've seen vaccine hesitancy, for the last 100+ years. I mean, social media hasn't been around that long.
Right. So I would say like the reasons why people are not vaccinating, and those are the same. It's not necessarily because of social media. Social media is like the avenue in which we are getting this information, right? It's not no longer the flyers people are posting up, although you do still see flyers around, people still doing that. it just allows people to be able to find these networked communities, which you're able to actually connect with people. So prior to the pandemic, you know, imagine you're a parent trying to navigate whether or not you're going to vaccinate your kid. You might bring this up to your pediatrician, to maybe your friends and your family, and they're just like, oh, what? You're not you're, that sounds crazy. You know, you have this like really visceral reaction from everyone. They're not vaccinating. And then you go to find an online community and they're like, let's listen to your concerns, your fears. Yes, absolutely. You should not be vaccinating here. And they give you a bunch of evidence of why you shouldn't vaccinate. And suddenly you're like, oh, maybe this is actually the right way. People here were wonderful and they're kind to me. They're willing to listen to me. And you got exposed to a lot of misinformation. So people found to these communities. Before that, it was much harder to find those communities and those spaces. And I would say prior to the pandemic, oftentimes it was a little bit trickier to find vaccine misinformation. You'd often have to go to like a specific vaccine, say Facebook group or a specific website. But nowadays, because, you know, the pandemic and the vaccine is like the number one topic on all our minds, you can literally find it anywhere. You know, it didn't just is no longer relegated to like fringe or smaller niche communities online. You can read a news article and just go in the comments and see vaccine misinformation, right? You cannot escape it.
Okay. So also, though, we're finding that it's not just anti-vaxxers who are spreading misinformation or misleading information. I want to give you an example. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, just here in Idaho, there was a claim that went viral because some of our hospitals here are under crisis standards of care right now. So there was this information that a universal do not resuscitate order was in place. So basically, people thought that means if your heart stops while you're in the hospital, I mean, guess what? They're not going to resuscitate you. That is false, but it spread quickly. And now the state and our health systems are actually having to try to correct that. So what does that example, you know, illustrate for you? Because I think there's this idea that only anti-vaxxers are spreading misleading information.
Yeah, that is absolutely not true. I don't know a single person in the world who's never spread misinformation, right? I think we right. are all absolutely capable of doing that. I know that I probably have done it myself in my life. I could think back in my youth. I probably still do
right.
that.
Well, yeah, in our nowadays. Youth, right?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, in my youth, like last week, right?
right.
It could happen to anyone. And it's not a political leaning thing. People, there could be right leading news and left leading news that also has misinformation. You know, it's what misinformation does, the tip that I often tell people is that when you read something online and it creates sort of this emotional response in you. So reading something that says like, oh, you're not going to resuscitate anyone if you come in, that creates an emotional response. You're like, oh my gosh, a hospital's not going to help me. And that should be your first signal and saying like, wait, maybe something is wrong here, right? If something is a really shocking or really emotionally charged bit of information, you know, take a moment, pause. Don't just immediately freak out. Don't just immediately want to share that with everyone, which is our instinct, right? Like we see something that's shocking or something that we want to be able to tell our loved ones or our friends or our network, we want to share that. You know, you imagine on a lesser sort of impact, like if you see a celebrity death, right? You see that and you're like, oh my gosh, this person died. I got to tell everyone. And you realize, oh no, it's a hoax. It's not true. And then, the risk of that is really minimal, right? You're like, oh, it's corrected. This person is alive and it's fine. But really the effects of misinformation then when it spreads this quickly is that it often spreads quicker and faster and wider than often the debunk, which comes off later, right? It is very, very quick and easy to create misinformation, particularly ones that have that emotional charge. And then the debunk doesn't always reach to the people. And sometimes it's too late for it to actually have an effect because now you're ready and you're hesitant. An example that went viral actually a few weeks ago was there was a news story that was posted by the Rolling Stone about how I have to remember which state it was. I think Oklahoma, where they said they were turning away gunshot victims because the hospitals are so overloaded with ivermectin, like overdoses and people off COVID. And actually, that wasn't true. And that was a case probably of like a little bit of bad reporting on their side because they didn't do any fact checks. They didn't verify. They just got a statement from someone who actually didn't have any evidence, but you saw that headline go everywhere, gunshot victims being turned away because the hospitals are so overloaded. And that spread widely. I even saw that rather than had the same sort of reaction, like, oh my gosh, that seems ridiculous, right? And in reality, that's not the case. And so anyone can absolutely follow through it. It even happens from a mainstream media source. It's not just sort of your fringe networks. Rolling Stone is a household name and it can still happen with them.
So before I let you go, I want to ask you one more thing about misinformation, and this is in regards to medical providers, because we have seen numerous physicians around the country spread misinformation, but specifically, you know, here in Idaho, Dr. Ryan Cole is on the Central District Health Board. This covers the Boise metro area, just among other regions, and he has referred to vaccines as, quote, needle rape, and he questions their efficacy. So how does this affect public health and trust when you have physicians giving out misinformation?
I think this is some of the hardest misinformation to combat when it comes from healthcare providers, be it a nurse or be it a doctor, because it's a lot harder of a nuanced conversation, right? The way that I used to often talk about, trying to like talk through the decision of whether or not to vaccinate is to talk to your healthcare provider, because talk to your doctors. But when we have doctors who have this sort of inherent trusted expertise we give to them, pushing out misinformation, it tells us one or two things. One, that actually vaccine misinformation is prevalent and can impact anyone. It does not matter necessarily how educated you are or how much background you have in healthcare. Anyone could fall subject to vaccine misinformation. You know, the content that they say the organization America's Frontline Doctors is really powerful, particularly to healthcare providers, because it uses their language, but it still is pushing out vaccine misinformation. So just because you're a doctor doesn't mean you're immune. But at the advice that I give to people, when you see sort of this disconnect, where you see some doctors you might trust supporting vaccines and some other doctors saying not supporting it, the important thing to remember is that science is a consensus, right? So it's not really just about like the one rogue doctor, especially if no one else is able to say replicate that study or have that same evidence or come to that same conclusion. The point of like an experiment or a study is when we have it being conducted in many different labs by many different scientists all across the world. And if overwhelmingly the consensus is yes, masks work, and yes, the vaccine is safe, and the yes, the vaccine works. It's like, if that is what the overwhelming majority of scientists and doctors are saying, that proves that, like, the evidence suggests that, yes, it is safe and necessary and efficacious. It's science is that consensus that if you were to make a volcano, like with baking soda and vinegar, anywhere in the country, it's going to do the exact same thing every time, right? And maybe it goes weird in one spot. You're like, oh, that's crazy. But you're like, oh, maybe something weird and funky happened there. You know, if it's something weird and funky happened everywhere, then we say like, oh, maybe the baking soda vinegar thing is not working anymore. And so the science is about that consensus. So when I urge everyone to think about when they see like, oh, here's this one doctor, here's the one whistleblower, even though that's a very sexy idea of the whistleblower, the rogue renegade, standing up against sort of like big pharma and the elite. It's like, no, at the end of the day, science is this consensus. That's why you replicate studies. That's why you have it being conducted all around the world. And we've had, you know, millions and millions of people who take the vaccine now, and they've all come out safe and fine and being protected against COVID. So that is, you know, I don't personally know Dr. Ryan Cole, but it sounds like he's putting out a lot of misinformation. And I would say, you know, that is one doctor. What are the rest of the doctors that I know saying? And I would guess that they're saying, take the vaccine.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us today about misinformation. We've been speaking with Dr. Alina Koltai. She researches vaccine misinformation at the University of Washington. We'll have more Idaho Matters next.